Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to On the Beans List, a podcast that celebrates the art of conversation with your host, Dean Latticer.
Thank you, George. Good morning, everyone. You are on the Dean's List. I'm your host, Dean Latticer. Thanks for tuning by this morning. This promises to be an outstanding show. My guest this morning, John Leslie Brown, is an inspirational speaker, an entrepreneur, business consultant, and the reason I've asked him by this morning, he has authored a new book called The Harvard Effect, which he's going to help us discover the Harvard mindset, and astonish the world with our unique skill sets. He's a powerful and dynamic speaker. He speaks internationally to groups of all ages, inspiring his audiences to reach for higher achievement. His core message is we must be more dedicated to our destinies than we are to our distractions. And speaking is, well, let's get this out of the way. It's in his DNA because he's also the son of a friend of mine, Les Brown, the acclaimed speaker and trainer. But you know what? That would not matter because his message and his mindset is his own, and I'm just delighted he's woken up early. He comes to us this morning from Los Angeles, California, where it's about 8 o'clock local time there. But he's a Detroiter. He's one of us. So please, let's give a warm On the Dean's List welcome to John Leslie Brown. Good morning, sir. Thanks for getting up and joining
us. Good morning. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I'm a big fan. I've listened to so many episodes back and studying, and thank you so much for your contribution to the industry.
Well, it's a delight knowing a lot of speakers, trainers, consultants. I think having a podcast, and you know about having a platform, it allows you the ability to champion people you're excited about. And I recently got a copy of your book, and I was totally blown away. I've done some writing coaching in my day, and I've read a lot of things. And this multimedia package arrives in my inbox. And I'm taking the listeners backstage because, wow, you try to get people to share of themselves, to be honest, to be vulnerable when they're writing. And oftentimes they write a bunch of muddy cliches and they repeat, they think they're rewriting one of Tony Robbins' books. Spot on and honest. Yours was just really crisp and original, and I really believe each generation has its messenger, and yet your message transcends generation. But I think for a lot of folks, your peer group and stuff like this, this is stuff they need to hear.
Thank you so much. I really appreciate that. And like you said, my dad is Les Brown, and growing up in that household, many people don't know, he put me on punishment for not writing a book when I was a teenager. Some people get on punishment for not doing their chores or getting bad grades. I was on punishment for not writing a book. And I had an audience. I had built an audience at an early age, started speaking at the age of 10 years old. I had a chance to sell books, but I knew then that I would rather be grounded then write a book that was not groundbreaking. And so I had to
about
the principles. I had to live them.
Well, let's just touch on that. One of the things in the book which I found interesting was your DNA came out at a time of loss and bereavement where you really spoke from your heart. It was your grandmother's funeral. And yet you just, you got up and you shared and you really, really had a powerful message as part of the eulogy there. And I guess everybody was just so totally blown away by your sharing on that day.
Yes, my grandmother is the reason why I speak. Her name is Mrs. Mamie Brown. And she was a person that had a third grade education. But she taught me about the Harvard effect. Even though she didn't have any letters behind her name, she had a big heart. And she always wanted to be a mother, even though she did not have a husband. And so she adopted two baby boys because no one wanted to take two kids. Maybe some of them wanted one, but no one wanted to take two but Mrs. Mamie Brown. And it was her hard work, my dad watching her scrub floors, watching her bring home the leftovers for the houses and the families that she used to work for, that inspired him to create a better life, to make sure that Mamie Brown would not have to scrub any floors anymore.
And I want to jump into the book because I want to make sure you were joking in the pre-call about how you were doing a presentation and you only got to the first letter of Harvard. Actually, it's an acronym for ways that you should live your life. Some great mindsets, some great thoughts there. I'm going to just quickly run through it, and then we're going to touch on all of them. H, the 100-year plan. A, allow yourself to fail. R, resource management. V, virtualize yourself. A, acknowledge your journey. R, rise to the occasion. D, dwell in gratitude. Wow. What powerful universal principles, and you've put them together in such a great, concise way. Let's go back to the beginning. Let's talk about the H, the 100-year plan. Now, I know companies think about 100-year plans, but this is kind of revolutionary that we would go macro, micro here, that as individuals we think of ourselves. Now, my mother's 91, so I think she's only got 8 years to figure out. But right. Talk about, as individuals, a 100-year plan for ourselves.
Yes, well, I had the privilege of being able to speak at Harvard University. And as I got together my message, you know, I had to think about it. There are really three curriculums of success. First, you have the dream phase, and we know about the dream phase. The dream phase will keep you up in the middle of the night with a smile on your face. The dream phase will have you making calls to people who you know can help you reach the next level again and again and again, filling up their voicemail until you get a yes. The dream phase is powerful, but after you turn those dreams into reality, the next step is the destiny phase. And the destiny phase is very important because if you don't claim your destiny won't claim you. And as I looked at what it was going to take to motivate the next world-class leaders, as you know, more presidential winners and Nobel Prize winners and world-class leaders graduate from that institution more so than any other university on the planet, I realized I had to develop a message for the third phase of success, and that is it's not the dream phase. You grow that, you grow past that, and it's not the destiny phase because you put in the systems in place to maintain destiny, but to sustain it, you got to have a dynasty. And the first step in positioning your dynasty is creating a 100-year plan.
Mm. Go on. Help us to see, because I don't think most people can think beyond the grocery list. Help us to see. What does a 100-year plan look like?
Exactly. That is so true. So this is how it came about. I've learned a lot from my dad. This is the person who says shoot for the moon because even if you miss, you'll land amongst the stars. This is the person that said when you get knocked down in life, always try to land on your back because if you can look up, you can get up. I mean, this is the guy, the same man who I have the privilege of calling dad who said we must be willing to do the things today others won't do in order to have the things tomorrow that others won't have. But out of all of the things that I learned from him, the most important lesson came not by something that I heard him say while he was on the stage. It was him and I at a private diner. And he said, John Leslie, I just did some work with the Gates family. I'm sure you're familiar with the Bill and Melinda Gates family, right?
Yes, and their foundation, great philanthropist.
Yes. Great philanthropist, and they said, we heard you in your presentation talking about your 10 and 20-year goals. Well, we want to show you something. They took my dad, Mamie Brown's baby boy, into the back room. They pulled up a screen, and they said, this is what the Gates family will be in the area of technology 100 years from now. Now, Dean, we got to think about it.
Wow.
Bill Gates, he's already in his 60s. He's not thinking that he's going to live another 100 years. But one of the things that he knows is that the contribution for his life will live beyond his own lifespan. And that's when I realized that the 100-year plan is powerful because it's not about all the things that you're going to do for yourself. Your 100-year plan requires you to ask the question, why will the world be different because you were born?
Powerful. powerful and yet true. I don't think we look at that because we all have our own unique gifts and talents to share here. So
yes.
So that's a powerful thing, the 100-year plan.
The 100-year plan. And think about the future. How will the world be different because you were born? And so one of the things that I started to think about, okay, where do we put this plan, okay? Because we can't put it on paper because what if we lose it? You know, I have a 2-year-old and he might write on crayon on it, you know what I mean? I can't have that happen, right? I can't just put it in my phone. What if my screen breaks or something? I can't just store it in my computer. What if I get a virus or somebody hacks it? Therefore,
so what's the answer?
We have to put it in the one unhackable, the one virus-proof location, and that we have to store it in our minds. And so when you think about a 100-year plan, the way that we break this down so that we can actually get it done is, you know, in business, even though you have a business plan that could be tons of pages, nobody's going to read that. They have something called an elevator pitch. I'm sure you're familiar with that, right? The elevator pitch and how important it is with networking.
Certainly. 60 seconds, if I was going to the top floor with, say, Warren Buffett. Mr. Buffett, here's my elevator pitch. Here's why I think you should invest in Dean's List Communications.
Yes, indeed. And you have to be very concise and powerful as if you were on an elevator, just like you described it. Well, I realized that the elevator pitch, that's all we knew at that time, but there has been some innovations on elevator, and we need a modern pitch so that we can take our 100-year plan, get the roots of it, and be able to articulate it in under 60 seconds. Imagine having a plan for your life where you knew how many people you were going to reach. You knew the impact of your life, not how much money you made while you were alive, but how many lives were touched because of what you did with your life. There's a big difference. And what I've realized is just like they have elevator pitches, we have to learn how to have a travelator pitch.
Define travelator pitch for us. I don't think that's right now in my Webster's dictionary. What's a travelator pitch there?
Well, yes, I was doing some research, and guess what? A travelator, those are those moving walkways that you see when you're going through the airport. You ever been?
Really? Oh, that's one of those things I never knew they had a real name for.
Yes, it's called a travelator, and you're more likely to meet someone on a travelator where they're going in one direction, but they also have the speed of the machine behind them. No one's just standing still in an elevator anymore, and you have to have something powerful. So your elevator pitch requires you to answer 3 questions. Who are you, what do you have, and why should someone care? Travelator pitch asks you to answer 3 questions, 3 different questions. 100 years from now, who will you have reached? Okay? How will that have impacted the planet? And why somebody else should get involved? And when you form a plan that's not just about you, you find a way to turn your life into a force for greatness and not just for your own benefit.
Wow, I think we could just spend the rest of the night talking about the 100-year plan here, and that's only the orientation chapter. Let's move into the freshman chapter here, allow yourself to fail. You know, I think most people fear failure. Instead, you're saying embrace it as part of the process and moving forward on it. So help us to shift the paradigm on here, allow ourselves to fail.
Okay, well, yes. Now let's make a distinction. This is not a chapter about failure. People fear failure, and they should. Okay, I'm not a person, because I know what failure feels like, I'm not a person that's here to endorse failure. This chapter is called Allow Yourself to Fall. Now, here's the key shift in thinking. Here's the key shift in thinking, and this is what your listeners should remember. Failure is not failure, okay?
Okay.
Don't be afraid of failure. As a matter of fact, when you implement the strategies of the Harvard effect on your life, you won't just be afraid of failure. Failure will be afraid of you, okay?
Oh, I like it.
Because you realize something. See, first you start off with the 100-year plan, and I know it's big. Like you said, so many people, they're just focused on their grocery list. They're too busy trying to stay above the ground. But when you have a plan for your life that goes beyond your own lifespan and you're not limited by the days that you think you have because you know that you were put here to bring something special, a long-term vision, what Warren Buffett calls something that has a durable competitive advantage. That idea, that concept, we have to take actions on it. And so when you allow yourself to fall, it allows you to become a groundbreaking individual. See, failure is not failure. There will be times where it seems like a failure, but Jim Collins, who wrote From Good to Great and Built to Last, he was doing a rock climbing exercise, and I got to be honest with you, Dean, you will never see me climbing a rock, okay?
My oldest one, Eric's the rock climber for all of us. So if Eric's listening, he'll appreciate this analogy.
He'll appreciate this. Okay, so Eric understands. If somebody says John Leslie Brown was on a rock, it didn't happen, okay? I might talk to a rock and tell it to motivate it out my way, but I'm not climbing a rock. But Jim Collins, he was doing this rock climbing thing, and it was an on-site climb. And on-site means that he didn't necessarily know the route. It wasn't mapped out. The territory was unknown. And one of the things, that when he got to this rock where he wasn't quite sure, he let go and he went down the harness. By the time he got down, he realized that he still had more in them. And what he had experienced was he realized two different things, that failure is making a conscious choice to give up. But failure is giving 100% without knowing the outcome. 100%
wow.
Without knowing the outcome. And so when
wow.
you have a 100-year plan for your life, that turns you into something that's called a black sky thinker. You know, corporations that do blue sky thinking, and blue sky thinking, that's the cousin of straight line thinking. Straight line
right.
thinkers, they're very logical, very practical. They can definitely complete assignments, but they know nothing about innovation. Blue sky thinking, they might be able to recognize the curve. They might even be ahead of it, but there's a term called black sky thinking that they use in the space industry where they have to make 100-year plans so that they go beyond current capacities to reach unknown territories. They're creating inventions based off of technologies that do not even exist yet, and that drives innovation at a whole other level. But when you have that type of innovation, you're going to fall. You know, I made the crazy decision of wanting to go into politics a couple of years ago, and I actually ran for office. And just before I had to turn in signatures and I had to study and I had to research different issues, and I turned in signatures to get on the ballot after paying, and I came 3 signatures short from making
Ouch.
It on the ballot. 3 signatures short
Ouch.
From actually following through. I did not know how I was going to look at the people again that believed in me. I didn't know if I was going to be able to come out of my house again. How do I explain it to my sons future years from now that I thought that I could make a difference in politics, but I came 3 signatures short. But guess what? That didn't stop me from having Harvard opportunities and having the opportunity to be on your show, which represents a Harvard curriculum in personal development. So I appreciate your time, but you've got to allow yourself to fall, and we have to remember that humility is not humiliation.
Wow.
Humility.
That is powerful wisdom. That deserves to be on a T-shirt.
I'm wearing it now.
All right. Along with a smile on your face. Let's talk about the sophomore chapter, resource management, your own mental equity, maximizing your downtime. And I know that's an important part. I put a meme up on the show page here that kind of touches on that on resource management. So enlighten us on that one there.
Yes, resource management. You know, it's so funny because there's a story about resource management now. because there's an audio album to go along with the book, my two-year-old son, Honor Phoenix Brown, the daycare called his mom, and his mom called me saying, hey, your son's in here saying research, research. What is he saying? Research. My two-year-old son was in there saying resource management, that he was asking to hear the song, you know. And so that's just a special moment to my heart that my son will grow up knowing what a resource manager is. And really, in life, you have natural resources. Natural resources, that's what the GDP is based off of. You know, the gross domestic product.
Right.
That determines, that has been the determinant of whether a society was growing and actually expanding. But I believe that within each of us, there are some supernatural resources, some supernatural gifts. Three of those gifts are your mind, your time, and your relationships. And I know that people think that good credit is a great resource. And I know they think that, you know, having a millionaire parent that might want to inherit, give you all their wealth, that would be nice as well. But if you can have and own your mental equity and control your time and have the decency to attract powerful relationships, and you can manage that properly, it makes all of the difference in the world. And that really is the key to happiness. In the Constitution, it talks about the pursuit of happiness. But we know now that there is a such thing called the science of happiness. There's an actual scientific study of happiness. And one of the things that I'm not sure if you've realized, one of the members of the Wang Chuk dynasty, a little society called Bhutan, they went to the United Nations, and they said, hey, you guys are measuring the health of a nation based off of the gross domestic product, but that only addresses how many products are sold within a given period of time. We need to implement something new globally called GNH, which stands for Gross National Happiness.
Wow.
Think about that.
That's a quantum shift from doing and acquiring instead recognizing the states of our being, feeling blessed, feeling gratitude, enjoying smiles. Those things you can't measure on a balance sheet.
No, but science has been able to actually track what it is. Turns out, in the science of happiness, Marty Seligman, he did research between the years of 1967 and the year 2000. There were over 41,000 articles, research articles done about depression, but there were less than 2,000 articles done about joy. You see the imbalance there. There was a 21-to-1 ratio of articles in the psychological field that was just about the negative science instead of how to get beyond the zero positivity, because, as you know, lack of depression doesn't necessarily mean that you're happy. And so when you talk about resource management, we looked at it and it says that only 50% of happiness is genetic. 40% is actually is intention. And 10%, just 10%, is about environment and circumstance. And so that's when we really get back to using the resource of our mind, our time, and our relationships in order to make sure that we're implementing the tools of the science of happiness in our life. Because when we have and work on our gross national happiness, we can make an impact that does not have an expiration date. As you know, joy is contagious.
Yeah. Oh yeah, and you can't get you can't give it away without getting some on yourself.
Yes, indeed.
Let's keep moving here, because this is good stuff, and most importantly, I want to make sure we get it all in this morning. The junior chapter, Virtualize Yourself, the Worldwide Learning Curve, the Social Credibility Movement, and more. Talk about doing that. I mean, that's one of the things that I think's acknowledging embracing that ability to really tap into the leading-edge technologies here and help really do some things that can – multiply ourselves, break down borders, and do the things that you know, fulfill the promises of the technology here.
That is so true. Alvin Toffler, in his book entitled Future Shock, he said, "The new illiterates of the world are not the ones that cannot read and write. The new illiterates of the world are the ones that cannot learn, unlearn, and relearn." And
wow.
In virtualize yourself, we have to look at the fact that there's a new digital responsibility that we all have. We have to teach our kids how not to make online choices that have offline consequences, okay? We have to inspire generations that come up with the new digital natives not to waste their time and their genius of the resources, of the supernatural resources of their mind, watching cat videos or binge-watching somebody else's dream on Netflix. You see, when we talk about virtualizing yourself, it's about tackling the worldwide learning curve in order to have a digital footprint that cannot be taken down. And there are some people, some greats in our industry. Wayne Dyer is not here with us anymore. Jim Rowan is not here with us anymore. We lost the great Zig Ziglar. We lost Earl Nightingale. Napoleon Hill, he's been gone. He was gone before I was born. But guess what? They're virtualized themselves. The products that they've made, the impact that they've made, that they've packaged, is still changing my life on a day-to-day basis, and they're reaching generations that were not even alive when they were. They're reaching unborn generations because they use the technology of their time in order to pay it forward. And in virtualize yourself, you might have to learn how to do a website if somebody else doesn't grasp and truly respect your brand. You might have to learn how to manage your own database. Don't count yourself out on that. Don't worry about who's going to watch the video. So what if you only get 6 views? 3 of those views might be multi-billionaires and needed your message for that day. And so we have to start building our tribes. And in the book called Tribes by Seth Godin, says that Internet eliminates geography. And
that
is how we unite beyond the borders.
And I think that's so important because we now throw harder stones into bigger ponds and create better ripples because of what you just said there. The right people will listen to this broadcast. The right people will read that blog post. The right people will always interface with us. We just don't know who they are. And so often it's that word that will go out and somebody else will say, "Wow, I needed to hear that. I needed to know that." That, you know, that hug, that virtual hug, that virtual wisdom, that virtual support that we can do by virtualizing ourselves.
Yes, and it's so important. And how dare you remain offline? How dare you stay anonymous on Google? How dare you question whether or not you have something to offer when these people will go online and post stupidity all day long, when people will go online and get millions of views based off of foolishness? We need to inspire a whole new generation of virtual thought leaders who use their internet connection as a vehicle for global transformation. And when you are implementing the Harvard Effect, it requires you to learn how to navigate the new tools so you can stay on the bleeding edge of transformation.
Wow. That, you know what, it's nice to hear you reframe technology. So often people want to say, you know, throw today's technological solutions. I'm old enough to remember CB radios, and I talk to a lot of baby boomers who just sit there and say, "Well, it's a trend, it's a fad." No, it's here to stay, and I think that you've put a great kind of mat around the frame that is this technology for us to really put it in context here.
Yes, and just think about if the generations before us had the tools that we take for granted every day. There was a time where if you wanted to get people to an event, you had to mail people, you had to send off the flyers. It was so much. You could, there was no meetup. There was no Facebook post. It was a total transition. We, in our generation, we should have our students learning how to make online choices that do not have offline consequences, because there's a whole new generation and the parents are disconnected and they're not sure. But when we can bridge that communication gap and ask ourselves as a family, in the future, what will the world be saying online about us? Let me tell you something, Dean. When in the future, 100 years from now, when they Google the name motivation, Mamie Brown's picture will pop up. In the future, 100 years from now, if we can have little league football teams and baseball teams and basketball teams, you will be able to go to Wikipedia and see that somebody from the Brown family started little league venture capitalist teams, little league thought leader teams, little league entrepreneurship teams, because we have an opportunity to not just take the great ideas that we have with our life with us when we go. We can build a team, and when you virtualize your vision, you never know who's going to support you. But you do know that if you don't get yourself out there, people won't have an opportunity to.
The fifth chapter, our senior chapter. Wow, time has flown. Acknowledge your journey. You've given high props here to Grandma, and for very good reason. I feel I know her from listening to your stories, from listening to your dad's stories. Again, a remarkable woman. I put something on my Facebook yesterday. Mitch Albom said about the heroes shouldn't be the athletes, the artists, and entertainers, but the couples who are trying to, make ends meet. I mean, those are really the heroes and the courageous people. Your grandma adopting your dad and his brother, those are the courageous people.
Yeah,
so acknowledging that
so
journey.
True. And acknowledge your journey. That's what the... And acknowledge your journey. And this is what I've learned. If you don't acknowledge your journey, you'll always be waiting for somebody else's acknowledgement. I've got to acknowledge my family journey. We talked about just bringing up my dad, Les Brown, who was labeled educably mentally retarded. But that didn't stop him from actually utilizing the principles that he learned. While my grandmother was cleaning floors, they were at a family's house called the Sadursky family. And Mr. Sadursky was a very wealthy man, and he used to listen to Earl Nightingale, a record called The Strangest Secret in the World. Now just think about that. Because my dad went with my grandmother to watch her scrub floors, he liked listening to The Strangest Secret in the World because he wanted to find out what was the force behind Mr. Sadursky's wealth. And he would intentionally not clean his shoes all the way. He would intentionally leave dust on the bookshelf. He would intentionally position himself in that room just so he can get access to those personal development principles. And as you know, there had been nothing in the marketplace like a motivational album like that at that time. And so through that journey, that's what I find inspiration in. And you too have a journey. All of the listeners, they have a story, but you gotta really to master the power of that story and carry the torch with it. The torch is timeless, and when you acknowledge your journey, it will inspire you to opportunities that were impossible before you were born.
And that's so important that we, one of the things I value that you're reminding us is this not just big picture, but total picture here, looking at the various components that really go behind both fulfillment and success. And that's so important. Plus, of course, Earl Nightingale. Oh, man, did that guy have a set of pipes on him? I mean, oh, my God, that voice rambled up from his ankles.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. And now here's the truth about The Strangest Secret in the World. He never went and sat down and said, hey, we're going to release an album that's going to sell over 1 million copies and it's going to have motivational principles. actually, he was scheduled to speak at a club, and he couldn't be there, so he sent a recording instead. He sent that recording instead, and by the time he got back, the people said, "This is so good, we just want the recording. You need to put this out." Columbia put it out, and it sold more than their wildest dreams. He did not realize that he was going to be the pioneer, one of the key pioneers in this industry, but he was searching until he found the book by Napoleon Hill, Think and Grow Rich. He was searching for answers even in his 20s. When he released The Strangest Secret in the World, guess what? Mamie Brown's baby boy got a hold of it. And once
you
he
never
got
know
a hold
who you're
of it,
touch.
He told it to me. Yes, indeed. And so that's why you have to acknowledge your journey. While my dad was scrubbing floors and listening to The Strangest Secret, it helped him to increase his self-worth and realize that he was meant for more. And sometimes we don't know how, when you're a new entrepreneur, you don't know how to charge for your services. Sometimes we are in relationships that are progressive, and we stop sticking up for ourselves. But when you acknowledge your journey, you don't allow somebody else to bully you. You realize that you might not be famous, or you might not be some celebrity, but your journey has value. And when you walk in the room and you are tested on who you are and whose you are, you'll always have the answers. So remember to acknowledge your journey.
Two more to go on this journey that you're taking us on this morning. John Leslie Brown talking about the Harvard Mindset, his book, The Harvard Effect, available on his website, and we'll make sure we'll tell you folks how to get a hold of your copies. The Master's Chapter, Rise to the Occasion, both common sense, uncommon sense, and commercial sense. I've never seen these three paired together there. Tell us more.
Yes, there's three types of thinking. There's common sense, and common sense is what gets in the way of most people. Common sense, that's knowing how to do the basic. But sometimes when you walk into a room, or when you're confronted with an opportunity, it's going to require some uncommon sense. You're going to have to think to yourself, hey, there's no traffic on the extra mile, so what different can I do here? What's a new approach? And so when we talk about what is it going to take to rise to the occasion, we're talking about what is it going to take within you in order to tap into the uncommon self-narrative to create something that hasn't been done. There's a quote that says, "True superiority is not gained by being better than someone else. It's gained by being better than your previous self." And so whenever you get confronted with an opportunity where you know it's going to require more of you, you know it's going to require you to learn something new, and you know that deep down inside, if you don't rise up to the occasion, you're not going to be able to stay at that new level. You're not going to be able to repeat your peak performance, and your peak will be behind you if you don't seize those certain opportunities, and those require commercial sense and uncommon sense. And so here's a quote for your listeners to remember: no one rises to low expectations. Sometimes you have to dig deep. If I did not rise to the occasion on behalf of my grandmother, Mrs. Mamie Brown, who adopted my dad, her blood doesn't run in me, but guess what? Her spirit does. And when I go to speak, when I went to go speak at Harvard, I wanted to give it the best speech of my life. Whether I'm doing an interview with you or just spending time with my son, I consider my life an occasion, and I'm working to rise. And there's also one of my favorite sayings says, "Stretch yourself, because you can't fit a big dream into a small life."
Wow. Well, we're coming up to the doctorate here, Dwell in Gratitude, and I think that this is the big red shiny bow that really encapsulates the whole package here, that gratitude. But I think help us to remind us again the power that is gratitude, dwelling in that mindset, to silencing our egos, and to instead making that joyful noise, if you will, about our lives.
Yes, yes. Actually, gratitude is the most important, principle in the Harvard Effect. So first thing you're going to do is you're going to make a mental picture of a 100-year plan, not a short-term plan, not a 21-day plan or a 5-year plan, a 100-year plan. Why 100 years? Because you're going to make an impact that's going to impact the globe generation after generation. How are you going to do that? Well, first of all, it's possible to make a 100-year plan. If it wasn't possible, if it's possible for the Gates family, it's possible for your family. If it's possible for Toyota, it's possible for the Browns. But you have to allow yourself to fall. Just because you miss, just because you might come up short or it might seem like it, you can't allow that to get in the way. You move beyond that with your resource management skills, tapping into the supernatural resources to really boost your gross national happiness, because happiness is a force that can actually remove decay from the mind. And then you move into acknowledging to virtualizing yourself and using the power of technology, figuring out what are you going to contribute that's going to impact people digitally, learning what you have to learn, that takes us to the next step, acknowledging your journey, remembering who and whose you are, standing up for yourself on the inside. Then you rise to the occasion when you're ever confronted with one. But guess what? If you do all of that, and forget about the D, if you forget about dwelling in gratitude, if you forget about the people who have molded the leader that you are today, you cannot forget this principle, dwell in gratitude. Some people dwell in complaint. Some people dwell in fear. Some people dwell in toxic relationships. But you have to be grateful for the air that you're breathing. You have to be grateful for the things that you've been given. And when you are grateful, great things continue happening in your life, and more importantly, that greatness that you have within you is unleashed. The best way to become great is to help someone else to become great, and that comes through the force of gratitude.
Wow, what a way to sum up everything. I think paraphrase Harvey McKay and steal his line, I guess you have to dig your own dwell here before you're thirsty.
I love that. Dig your own dwell.
Yes. You know what? Here's the thing. I wanted to make sure we did justice to the time. I'm glad we got through all of them. That's the tough part, because the stuff you sent me was so rich and so reflective. Even though I've been on this personal journey at least the last 30, 35 years of my own life, whether you're, you know, in your 50s like I am, whether you're in your teens and 20s, the stuff that you say resonates with all ages, because we're all at different places and our ears have heard, geez, I've heard gentle nudges here, and I've also, one or two of these, you'd really dropped an anvil on me to remind me, hey, Dean, remember this universal truth? Remember this principle? So, wow. I mean, it's just, you know, thank you for, on behalf of your readers, our listeners and stuff like that, for encapsulating so much truth and wisdom in really, you know, obviously it wasn't just the journey of speaking to the students at Harvard. It was the journey that's come beyond that and that has engaged you into this next realm of your personal journey there.
Exactly, and I am so grateful. It says that someone said, gratitude is the music of the heart when its chords are swept by the breeze of kindness. And and I love our industry. I thank you so much for the opportunity to be on your show, and hopefully your listeners will use this fuel to go out and be a breeze of kindness. Thank
this isn't your first book. There, you've got some great stuff on your website, which I think, you know, I know I follow you on social media, but for people who don't or people who want to access more of your materials, what's the best ways to follow you, John Leslie?
Well, yes, actually, a couple things. One, they can text. We have a short code. If you text the word Harvard, H-A-R-V-A-R-D, to the number 63975, you just pull up your text to put in the number 63975, and you text Harvard. That'll actually send your listeners a special gift, an audio series of mine, and give them all the follow-up information. Just text the word Harvard to 63975, or they can go to harvardeffect.com, harvardeffect.com, or johnlesliebrown.com. Thank you so much for helping me to virtualize myself. I'm building my time. When I said I didn't want to go on Facebook, I definitely didn't want to Instagram. Now I'm Periscoping, Blabbing, Instagramming, iPodding, everything you could call it, because if you don't expand, you are expendable. So I would appreciate everyone reaching out by texting the word Harvard to 63975 or by just going to johnlesliebrown.com, JohnLeslieBrown.com. And if you forget my name, just remember, I'm Les Brown's baby boy and Mamie Brown's pride and joy.
Oh, my goodness. Oh, my goodness. Always a delight to hear that. You know, actually, you are blessed that as we talk about the Jacksons and the Osmonds being the first families of music, you are definitely, you and your siblings are the first family of inspiration and motivation.
Yes, yes. Thank you. And I love working with my brothers and sisters. It's so great. And I'm the youngest, so.
Yes.
I get to learn from all of them.
Well, they've chopped down the trees and cleared the path, and now you have created quite a path for yourself. Really?
Yeah.
Boy, I'm glad I booked a little extra time, because I think this has all been time well spent. Really, there's only one last thing to say, and this is definitely appropriate with today's show. John Leslie Brown, you are on the Dean's List.
Yes, 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 we made it. Thank you. Appreciate
we made
you,
it.
Sir.
Yes, yes. All right. And that's where I've got to leave it today. Say hi to your old man for me. You know, I did give him the chance to be on the show, and I'll just kind of tease him here in the public square. But you know what? This was just a tremendous hour here, and I appreciate taking the time out, waking up early. And a shout out here to all your friends in the Motor City, because we still love you. You still have the Motown soul in your roots.
Yes, I do. Detroit, I miss you. My family had Green's Barbecue on the west side.
Don't go there. You're making me hungry. It's almost lunch when we record this. John Leslie, I hope we can catch up with you again sometime in the future, because I'd like my guests to come back and check in with me. But again, you are on the Dean's List, and I am grateful for your time. Again, text Harvard to 63975. That's 63975 here, and you will get a special opportunity. So, you know, do that on your smartphone or on your tablet, and you've really got some powerful tools here. I'm your host, Dean Latticer. This is On the Dean's List, the podcast that celebrates the art of conversation here. Next week, former Detroit News Media columnist and current contributor to the Detroit Metro Times, Jim McFarland, is going to stop by. That's going to be another fun one here. And we've got some other great guests in the pipeline, and as soon as we book them and confirm them, we'll let you know. Until next time, it's been this time. Thanks for listening in.